I love getting to worship with you guys, whether you're online, whether you're right in here. Isn't that just amazing to go together into God's presence and to sing of what he's like and our dependence on him? And then to get to see these Stephen ministers, as Denny said, that reset that we're talking about, the change that we believe God is leading us towards of all of us, using what God has given us in our gifts, in our experience, becoming equipped, becoming discipled, and then serving and loving others. Isn't that amazing? I love that. And then, did you catch the intro video there? I know you saw it. Did you hear the words to the song? We have some very creative people, and they put that together, and I've seen it several times now, but those pictures tell a story. It tells a story of what's happening all the time out in our world. Not just in our world, in our community and in our lives. And we come together, and what a beautiful picture of coming together, and we're thinking about the Lord. He has our praise. We get to see what he's doing. We celebrate that. And then we're reminded of what's happening in this broken world all around us. And if you listen to the words, that actually was Nick singing that, which that's pretty impressive, isn't it? He's so talented, and he's using his gifts, and I'm so glad. But if those words you heard, what was it talking about? It's actually a prayer. It's a question. And a lot of times our prayers are things that we're asking for. They're not really questions. They're more like demands or requests. This is a wondering. This is a prayer where someone here is just distraught with what's happening in their life and in the lives of the people they love and in the place and the community that they love and the country that they love. And their prayer goes something like this. God, I do not understand this world. Everything is dying and broken. Why do I see nothing but suffering? God, I'm asking, could this be your plan? Sin has taken hold of this whole land. It's a prayer. It's a song. Seems fitting. As we go through this series, we're going to be inching closer to the end of this song where God does reply. And that reply is found in Job 38. But we are building a foundation in the realities that we all live in, where we can worship God and he can be the center of our hearts and our minds, and then we live in this fallen, broken world. And guess what? We know the solution to the brokenness. We know him. We know the one who has the solution to the brokenness in our own lives and in the lives of people around us. We have the solution, and it's him, and we know that, but we are on this journey as we look again in Genesis to see what God's plan is. God, could this be part of your plan? Well, that's what we're talking about today. We're going to be back in Genesis 1, and we're going to be looking at God's plan. He does have a plan. He has an answer to that prayer and those requests of what's happening. Could this be part of his plan? Yes, it's part of his plan, and he has a solution for the brokenness and the hurt and everything that you see around you. So, what is his plan? Last week, Denny kicked us off, and he only got to two verses. Way to go, Denny. That's not very far, is it? And then he said something like, I'm going to do four chapters. He didn't even do two verses. Did everyone hear him say four chapters? I'm like, four chapters, two verses. Anyway, and what was the first verse? In the beginning, God. There's your solution. But God has a plan, and I love that, and it sets the tone, and it starts off the story that lays out the plan. Guess where it tells us? Where does it start with? Who God is. In the beginning, God. He is the I am. And why the I am? He has no beginning, he has no end. He's eternal. He's the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. He has no boundaries. So this person who's telling us the story is introducing himself. is the eternal one, the one who knows everything. And then he goes on to tell us more about himself as he reveals his plan. And his plan is one of creating. And I love the way that the Apostles' Creed takes Genesis 1 and a few other verses and makes it a declaration. Do you know how important that is? You know the difference? We can read Genesis 1 and we can say, in the beginning, God. And then it says what he did, how he began to create, and how he did that. We can read that, but the Apostles' Creed is a declaration. And it starts with, I believe in God, the Father Almighty, the creator of heaven and earth, and his only Son, Jesus Christ, our Lord. It's a declaration. There's a difference. One's very passive, and we can read that, have no impact on us. The other is me saying, you saying, I believe in God, the Father Almighty, the creator of heaven and earth. So that is what we're hoping to do, to see his plan, to see him for who he is, and to take that message and the healing that only he can provide into our own lives and those around us. So, I know any time that we're in Genesis, and Denny mentioned this last week as well, that the idea of God as the creator comes up against the thoughts of evolution and what should we do with that, and does a day mean a day, and what about this and what about that. Let me just preface by saying this is not that message either. That's not what we're going to be talking about today. And I want to just encourage you with something, that very godly people who love God, love his word, know Jesus, love Jesus, are our brothers and sisters that have different opinions on what this is actually saying. They would discuss and debate what kind of writing it is. But let me tell you what's important. And let's talk about our response when we disagree with someone, just in general, but even on something very important like creation and the origin of humanity and the world. Remember, you're a sinner saved by grace. I'm a sinner saved by grace. And I can't tell you how much grace, because if I did, how much grace I've given, I couldn't be your pastor anymore, right? Like, that's how much grace God has given, and he just keeps pouring it out onto me. It's a never-ending flow. And that's what he's doing for you. And then to think about how I would relate to other people. Yes, I'm talking about others in the world. I'm also talking about with you as my brothers and sisters. How could I have anything but grace towards you? And how could you have anything but grace towards me? The important thing as we look at Genesis is that God's hand is involved. He is who he says that he is. He is the I am. So that would build our faith. And that's really what I wanted to get to and just have a backdrop as we now go into some verses. But this idea of how big is your God? That's the question I want you to be wrestling with as we go through and read about how big our God is. We'll have some other questions. How big is our God? Now, if I was to ask you that, you should have to think a lot. But if I just said to you, how big is God, that should be a fairly simple answer, right? Can be contained. He's so big, he can do anything, he's all powerful. Like, just the description of God out there, how big is God, is one thing, and Psalms 113, 5 and 6 gives us an idea just how big he actually is. I'm going to read it to you. Psalms 113 says this, who can be compared with the Lord our God, who is enthroned on high? He stoops to look down on heaven and on earth. We know that the expanse of the universe is billions of light years across and wide and deep. In fact, they haven't got to the ends of it yet. And this tells us how big God is, that he actually has to stoop down to see it. He's uncontainable. But that's not the question that I wrestle with. And the question I'm asking you to wrestle with is, how big is your God? How big is He? How big is He in your life? I was thinking about when I was a kid. God was big enough to me that I knew He could do things, but small enough that I could put Him in a little genie's bottle. You know what I mean, right? And no, I didn't rub Him and ask for wishes. I didn't. You don't do that with God. What do? You bow your head, you close your eyes, and you fold your hands. And God, it's going to rain today, and I have a baseball game. Could you make it not rain? I prayed that a lot. Is there anything wrong with that prayer? No. I knew my God was big enough that He could make it not rain. He's also small enough that I could put it over right here. And as I got older, my prayers grew more sophisticated. I stopped praying for the weather as much because I was playing football now, and you get to play football no matter what the weather is. And I figured out something. I could ask God, and again, I didn't rub the body. I just was able to bow my head, close my eyes, cross my hands, and ask God to help me win. Because what I have found, and I don't know if you've experienced this, winning is a lot more fun than losing. Isn't it? And I like to win. And I prayed some pretty ridiculous prayers. And it was all related. Our prayer life is an indication. My prayer life was an indication of how big and how small my God was. I knew that God could work. I knew that He could do things that I couldn't. I got older. I started praying for tests that God help me. I didn't study, but help me pass this to stay eligible to play sports. See how it's all off the theme there? And then I met Karen. Oh man, I prayed. I was a man of prayer those 18 months where we were dating, and she would break up with me about every other week, right? God, blind her eyes. Take away all her discernment. I'm not kidding. Like that, those were my prayers. And I knew God was big enough to do that, and He did. See? How big is your God? I could talk about other things and ridiculous things that I've prayed for. It was related to how big my God was. And here's the thing. Like this morning, I was thinking about how different my prayer life is now. Because my God's bigger. I prayed, watching the sunrise, that the Packers would beat the Bucks. That's a big prayer, but even bigger than that, this is how big my God is, and that He would humble Tom Brady. That's how big my God is this morning, right? Okay, joking aside, your prayer life is an indication. My prayer life is an indication of how big God is in our life. And what I have found in my life, that my God is pretty big in a crisis. He's pretty big when things are all falling apart, and I know He's big enough to engage. But is your God big enough to go with you today? Is He big enough for the everyday? Is He big enough for you to follow Him this afternoon, to follow Him wherever He leads you? Is He big enough to help you in the relationships that you're struggling with? Is he big enough to trust Him not just in a crisis when you're in the emergency room, but actually you're struggling with your health? Is He big enough to trust with your kids, with your adult children and the choices that they're making? Is he that big to you? How big is your God? How big is your God? I found that we are much better when things are in crisis. We know He's big enough to help us there. But what about the everyday? And the problem is when our God is too small, we live very small lives. We live very small lives. When our God is too small to lead us through our day, we live very small lives. And that's not what He has for us. So He tells us and he communicates to us how big he is. And he does that through his spoken word. He does that through the written word. And Denny talked about this in John 1, the incarnate word, Jesus Christ. And now we're going to see he communicates how big he is so that you would know how big he is and you would take him wherever you go. You don't have to leave him in your closet or in a genie bottle. He's with you and you're following him through your day. He tells us. And we can see that in creation. And so let's read Genesis 1, 3 through 10. It says this in verse 3. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning the first day. And God said, let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from the water. So God made the vault and separated the water under the vault from the water above. And it was so. And God called the vault sky, and there was evening, and there was morning the second day. And God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear. And it was so. God called the dry ground land, and gathered the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. We could go on and you would see the pattern emerge that God speaks. And there is power in his word. And when he says something, things happen. And then he says, and they are good. We could go on to verse 11 and 12 all the way through the chapter until we get to when he creates humanity, Adam and Eve. And he says, good, I do it. He says it, he does it, it happens, and it is good. And then with Adam and Eve, he says, it's very good. See, creation is a way that God communicates to us to help us answer that question of how big our God is. I was thinking about Romans 1:19. I'm going to read that to you because it tells us what we can see in creation. Romans 1. They know the truth about God because he's made it obvious to them. For ever since the world was created, people have seen the earth and sky through everything God made. They can clearly see his invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, so they have no excuse for not knowing God. And that's speaking to people all around the world. And you can travel anywhere in the world, and there are a couple things that you'll see. One, everyone has a theory about how the origin of the world began. There's always an origin theory of how things happened, because what they see, they know there's an explanation for, and they want to know what it is. They also, if they're looking at it, and God says this, he says he makes it obvious to them about himself. Go to Papua New Guinea, go to Laos, go anywhere in the world, and you'll have people with those theories. You'll also have people that are amazed at the creation. Now, what typically happens, they'll take those things that they see and then they start to worship them as opposed to the God who created those things. That's, if we continue to read in Romans, we'd find that out. But what about us as believers? What do you see when you see creation? How many sunrises have you seen in your life? I've seen about 50 years worth, give or take. I'm still amazed by them. I still once in a while even take a picture of them. I've got a whole bunch of pictures already, but what is it about a sunrise? What is it about the first snow? What is it about the ice on a tree limb? What about the mountains in Colorado? What do you see when you see God's creation? We should see him. We should see how big he is. And if we were to look at the microscopic, if we'd go down into details, we'd see details that we can't even imagine. We'd see how creative he is and how much care he has and how he designs things. If we looked at the expanse of the universe, we would know that not only is he capable of minute detail, he can hold it all together simply by the power of his word. All of this, he holds together just by the power of his word. That's how big God is, and I hope that he becomes that big to me. Hope becomes that big to you. And we could talk about the difference of the way that we look at the world. But in the story of creation, God revealing himself to us, he's revealing who he is and what he's like. That's why when you look at creation, and even staunch atheist, Richard Dawkins, he can't help but be amazed at God's creation. Now, he'd never say God created it, that's for sure, but he's amazed by it. Everyone is amazed by it. It's something about it, the grandeur of it, the scope of it, the care of it, the design. When we see that, that should be speaking to us. We know it's speaking to the world, but it should be speaking to us about how big God is. I was going to spend some time talking a little bit about the material world. Let me just condense what was going to be 5 minutes into about 30 seconds. We look at the world wrongly. There's people in the Eastern religions, they would say that matter doesn't actually exist. That's not right. They say it's all constructed in your mind. What do we say in the Western world? We say there's only matter. There's no spiritual. What God says, and as we go through this story and this creation, God says there's both. And we tend to think as Christians that the world is evil. No, no, no. The world is fallen. It's broken. It's not evil. And often when we talk about the world, we're actually talking about the systems of the world and the culture in the world and who's the prince of the power of the air here in this world. Well, it's God's enemy, Satan. And of course that's going to be bad. And of course there's evil there. But I'm talking about the material world. And some of the things that God has given us to enjoy, we don't because we think the world, the material world, is evil. Or somehow we shouldn't be able to enjoy that. Actually, it's part of God communicating to you how much he cares about you, how much he loves you, the way that he provides for you, not just in the beauty, but in sustenance and life and air and food and drink. Why do you think Jesus, the first recorded miracle is what? What's the first miracle that Jesus did? Man, you guys know that verse, don't you? He turned water into wine, so that he did. The first miracle wasn't a spiritual miracle at all. It was physical. The party, a wedding, was starting to do this because they were running out of wine. And what did Jesus do? He takes water and does a miracle and makes great wine, and the party kicked back up. He wanted them to enjoy that. God wants us to enjoy the things that he provides for us. Now, the opposite of that, if we took that to the extreme, would be hedonism. If this is all there is, if it's just physical, it's all to be enjoyed, then I'll live however I want, get as much as I want, all that. And we know that that's destructive. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being able to enjoy the good things, good food, a beautiful sunset, a walk on the beach, my backyard. That's what he wants, and he wants us to see him and know how good and loving he is. That was more than 30 seconds, sorry. We're not going to go over. Okay, we're going to conclude here. And this is really important. We had a problem because of the fall. The world now has a problem because of the fall. We know that. We recognize that. But when we talk about humanity, when we talk about people, we talked about the material world, but let's talk about us. What happened to us at the fall? What happened at the fall, and we're going to see this in a couple weeks, is that we were no longer just good. It doesn't mean we don't have any good in us. In fact, God still loves us. We're still created in his image. But we don't perfectly love God or each other. And because of that, that separates us from God. That's the truth. That's what he says. That's what happened. And so there's been billions of people who have lived, and none of them perfectly loved God and perfectly loved other people. None of them. even though they're created in God's image, even though they have tremendous value to God and he loves them. None of them were good enough and pleasing enough for God to say to them, you're perfect. Except Jesus. Only one. In Matthew 3:17, it says this. And a voice from heaven said, this is my son whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Remember that plan that we were talking about and how big our God is? Our God is big enough that he would die for us. Those are the only words that were ever spoken to anyone that's ever lived, that God said, I am pleased with you. All of us could say, I love God. I love you. God can say that to everyone, and he does. But he's pleased with Christ because he perfectly loved the Father and he perfectly loved others. That's the remedy. That's the solution. He is the solution. He is the only one worthy. He's the only one that's ever lived that was worthy for God to say, I'm pleased with what you've done, how you've lived every minute of your life. You have been perfect. You're worthy to redeem people, to save people. You're worthy. You are the only one. And he went to the cross. And think about that. He went to the cross, and on a hill that he created and people he created, he gave up his life for them, for you, and for me. So when we say that God was well pleased with him and he perfectly loved people, he perfectly loved God, that is the evidence. And then darkness came. And he said, God, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because he took my sin on him. And that wasn't pleasing to God. He took your sin, and that wasn't pleasing. He took the sins of the world upon himself to pay for them. That's how big my God is. It's how big your God is. And he was buried, and he was resurrected. And now my big God is sitting on a throne, and he is not wringing his hands. He's still holding all this together just by the power of his word. And not only that, my God is big enough to care about me and the hurts that I feel and the sadness that I feel in my baseball game when I was a kid. That's how big our God is. We are going to be singing now as we close. And thinking about how worthy he is. He is worthy to be big in our lives, our everyday lives. And this is similar to the Apostles' Creed. And this song is a way for you to declare what you believe about God. What you believe about the condition of the world. We get to sing an affirmation. So as we sing, let that be your heart. Say those things in affirmation of who God is. My prayer is that he'll get bigger for all of us. Why don't you go ahead and stand as we sing?